We're doing a double header.
Do like a soccer player.
A double header. More than entertained Adidas. It's a good look.
That's right.
Adidas would sponsor More Than Entertained, or More Than Entertained would sponsor.
That'd be very
Adidas.
Cool. It wouldn't make any sense, but that would be really cool. Yeah. Are we recording right now?
I mean, I'm recording. Yeah. Oh, we don't have to put this on. You want to get your bad words out?
Yeah.
Okay. Go.
Bleep boop. Bleep, bleep, bleep.
Yeah, all right, we'll cut that out.
I was watching an Instagram. Yes, I was on Instagram today, but I was watching an Instagram video.
Just to be clear, via the Colloquium Instagram account. Or you have your own?
No, I have my own. Yeah, I've had my own. Yeah. But I was watching Michael Phelps, his relay team. He's some biker or something, anyway.
Okay, yeah. The Livestrong guy, right?
Yeah. No, he was watching his, like, it was the famous relay, swimming relay, where, you know, he, like, his, like, teammate comes in and, like, and wins at the last minute. Mm-hmm. And Michael Phelps is on the side, and he's, like, shouting and cheering. And, like, you can't hear what he's saying in the first place, but the audio just, like, makes this really loud beeping noise when he curses.
Mm.
So, like, all it does is accent the point that
he's cursing. Yeah.
It's like, I wasn't paying any attention to what he's saying, but since you're beeping, now I know that he is, you know.
Anyway. Yeah, that's so interesting, huh? Yeah. There's definitely an element, like, I feel like when I was a kid, I wasn't as good as lip reading. But, like, lately, like, if you watch, like, particularly, like, Major League Baseball,
and,
like, you watch, like, the manager-umpire arguments, like, you can read the lips pretty clearly. And I think I just have a better... This is sad, but, like, I have a better idea of what they would say to the umpire because I've seen enough. I've actually watched, like, the lip readings. Like, a guy breaks it down, and he'll, like, tell you what he's saying to the umpire because he's really good at reading lips.
Yeah.
And so they have, like, their go-to insults that are also mixed with, you know, certain cuss words. And so I just kind of, like, because I know what they might say, I can, like, usually read their lips a little better.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that makes sense. It's sad. I don't like it, but...
Yeah. I'm trying to think of a good Sandlot insult.
You play ball like a girl.
We just got canceled.
They don't typically say that.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a lot of horse. That was a horse manure call, Blue.
Yeah, that's all. That's what they say.
Or F-U. No, they actually do say that, but not manure.
Gotcha. Yeah.
But not like bull. They say horse.
Oh, I see. Yeah. I see.
I don't know why. It's just what they say.
Gotcha. You made it more friendly.
Yeah. This is a PG show.
Yes, it is.
Do you think it's PG or G?
I don't know.
I feel like some episodes are PG.
Yeah, I feel like it's PG.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Parental Do you want to make it PG-13?
No, not really.
How would we do that if we were to make it PG-13?
I'd have to look up the ratings. What if, I know we can't say more than two F word. No, more than one F word.
Okay.
Or it would be R, but I don't plan on saying any, so...
I don't either.
Yeah.
If it happens, it happens.
If it happens, it happens. Just kidding. All right, but here we are for a doubleheader.
Indeed.
In our first one, what are you calling this one we're doing tonight?
I'm calling it Are You Not Entertained Part 2.
Because that's what I called the first one that was kind of like this, but...
That's right.
We didn't actually call it that.
We did. Oh, so. Did
on
we not?
On the podcast. Oh. Yeah. That's just what I called the Google Doc. So.
That's awkward. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
But for our sake, we can. I know what you mean.
Yeah. Entertainment topic, part two. Yeah.
It's going to be kind of a cross between the More Than Entertained episode that we did with Brennan, right? Brennan. Sorry, Brennan. I know a lot of Brennan and Brendans, and it is really confusing which one is which sometimes. But anyway, it was like a cross between that. The, like, what have you been praying about, and the, like, top books to read.
Mm-hmm.
It's we're going for something like a combination of those three.
Yep. It's simply a what forms of entertainment have we been taking in lately?
Yeah.
And we will talk about them.
Yeah. All right.
Sounds fun to me. I'm down.
Why don't you start us off? You've been You've had a little more time on your hands.
Yeah.
And consumed a little bit more than I have.
Yeah, you think I'm sitting around twiddling my thumbs, taking in entertainment all day, every day. I see.
It's kind of my image of your life right now, yeah.
I see. Maybe let's do this. Let's alternate. So I'll do one that I've been taking in, and then
okay. You'll
go.
Well, maybe should I start? Because I have six, and you have four.
Ah, I see you doing maths. Yeah, let's do it. Yeah,
okay.
Sounds good.
All right, and I'll combine my two. That way it's going to be like I have five, so I'll combine two of them. All right.
Perfect.
So I have been taking in a lot of podcasts lately. And particularly, I mean, not just Catholic podcasts, but I'm going to talk about the Catholic ones because I don't think anybody really wants to hear about my White Sox podcast that I'm listening to. I don't think anyone wants to hear about that. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that's on Catholic. That's probably the main thing.
What about, do you get your news on podcasts?
Do you listen to news podcasts? Oh, yeah, I do. I do listen to some. Not as much in the last few weeks, but yeah. Yeah, gotcha. There's one particular source of my news that I get via podcast format.
Gotcha.
But yeah, it's been lately, the last couple of weeks, Catholic podcasts. I love Catholic podcasts. That's why I have one.
Fair enough.
Get it? Because we have a Catholic podcast.
Wait, we're Catholic?
Yeah.
Oh.
I just really do enjoy them, and it's just I love being able to like drive and listen, or to wash dishes, or to mow the lawn, or to just these things that I can just listen to podcasts while I do. I love doing those things. And so my two that have been, I guess I'll start with Pints with Aquinas. We're both huge Pints with Aquinas fans. I think Pints, I've just listened to periodic ones from them. From Matt, mm-hmm. Mr. Matt Frad is the guy. I guess for those who have not listened to it, I feel like a lot of our listeners will be familiar with him. But Matt Frad started a podcast years back. He was a speaker. He speaks primarily about chastity and pornography. And then he started doing this podcast kind of on the side when he was doing a graduate program as a project. And he called it Pints with Aquinas. It was initially like, read Aquinas and explain it. And then it just morphed into, it has very little to do with Aquinas on a day-to-day basis. But
yeah, he's probably going to change the name of that one day, I figure.
I wonder if he will. I feel like he's talked about that, and yeah, he's sticking with it for now. But it's still called Pints with Aquinas, but it's basically, I mean, it's got to be the number one like Catholic talk show that's out there.
Yeah.
Better than the Catholic talk show.
Yeah, it's close. It's close, if not number one, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Father Mike Schmitz is probably the most downloaded podcast, right? But as far as like somebody who interviews other Catholic people, like I just don't think there's a bigger one out there. I don't know. I'd be interested if somebody thinks there's one that is that I'm not thinking of. But
yeah, I really like Pints with Aquinas too. I think Matt Frad has his product exactly right. I just think I may not even agree with a lot of the ways he approaches some of the ways he approaches things and things like that. I love listening to Matt Frad, don't get me wrong. But my point is, he knows exactly like what he's good at. He knows that people love to listen to him talk. You know, he knows that he's really good conversationally.
Yeah.
And yeah, he just knows how to converse with people so well. I think it makes them feel welcome. And he just has his product exactly right.
Yeah, yeah, and it's in a way that. And this goes back to that he knows how to converse with people. But, I mean, he's just like a good talk show host in that he, like, makes it about the person. Like, he keeps the conversation really interesting. He plays on his own experience and his own ideas only to, like, highlight the interesting ideas that the other person has to say. And rarely am I disappointed with the direction he takes something. Like, he usually takes it in the most interesting direction. So he's skilled at what he does. And I agree with you. I don't agree with every take he has, but he does a good enough job of what he does that doesn't bother me. Like I don't get bothered. And it's like, and honestly, you kind of get to know his opinions and like know what he's going to say in some ways.
Yeah,
and it just doesn't bother you if you disagree with it. Cause you like, it's not about him and his opinions at the end of the day. But, one of the things I found with Pints is that there's so much content now that, I mean, I can't listen to it all by any means. Like, you can listen to every episode of Colloquium because we get, you know, if we're lucky, to a month. But he's got some weeks 4 or 5 3-hour episodes a week. you know, it's 15 to 20 hours of content a week, like if you want to keep up with it. So I found, and we talked about this the other day, but I found I have to really pick and choose what I listen to. And it's like one might be kind of interesting, but I'm not going to click on it because I got to wait till like the one that really interests me, or I'm just going to be binging and it's going to be too much.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I listen to like one a month, probably one, two every month of Pints of Aquinas, but I really enjoy what I do listen to.
Yeah. So the two, I know we both listened to the Mormonism. You told me about it. That was one I skipped over, and then you said it was good, so I went and listened, and that was good. You're right.
Thank you. I know.
And then the other big one I listened to with Pints was Homesteading.
You're talking about like homeschooling? Is that what you're talking about?
No, Homesteading.
I don't know what that is.
So it was, he had a guy on, James Henry?
Okay.
Shoot, John Henry. John Henry Spann, I think is his name. He was just a friend of his who, homesteading is like growing your own food.
Ah.
And it's one of the movements. This is something I've been really intrigued by, and maybe this is the point I'll bring up with Pints, and probably won't get to Catching Foxes before you go.
Okay. Yeah, no worries.
It's going to combine, but I don't want to go on. I've been really intrigued by and having some conversations about, you know, it's definitely related to the digital minimalist movement, particularly in Christian and specifically Catholic circles, but ways of resisting maybe the toxicity of the culture. You know, one is like the Steubenville approach, like build an awesome community where you can walk everywhere and all your neighbors are just like threatening, you know, you're not that you're living in this Catholic bubble, but like you're living in a city that, you know, like Steubenville is not a Catholic city per se, but there have been just so many good organizations and people that have popped up in it that there is vibrant community that can deal witness to the city, right? But homesteading is like the other extreme with the same goals. It's like rebuilding Catholic community, but in the rural environment rather than the urban environment. And there's pros and cons to each, but one of the pros is that in homesteading, particularly like financially, you can, if you can get to the point where you're growing your own food, you can divest from cooperating with all these sinful companies that we give our money to every day, right? So if you're self-sufficient, you're ready for the zombie apocalypse, for one. That's a plus, but that's a joke.
That is. Yep. Oh, ha, ha, ha.
But two, you're, to some people, maybe it's not a joke, but two, you have, it's so much easier to, let me think of some examples here, like not buy off Amazon, to find alternative companies, you know. You can live off less money in a sense if you're raising a lot of it on the farm. So there's a lot of perks to it from that perspective. So this podcast went into it and they talked about little ways you can do that without, because most people can't really grow all of their own food. But there are ways in which you can rebuild Catholic culture, divest a little bit from the sinful things we give our money to in a more rural environment. So I thought that's been interesting to think about for me lately.
That's really good. That's really interesting. Yeah.
Your turn.
My turn. Ding, 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 ding. So the first one that I have, I think I will not touch on that in too much detail.
You want to say it and then...
Yeah, I will. Yeah. I have almost finished. The only reason I haven't finished is because there's... Well, let me say first what I'm reading. I'm reading Jordan Peterson's 12 Rules for Life. Mm-hmm. I've finished all 12 rules in the book. I just haven't finished that like last chapter where he wraps it all up. So I've essentially finished it. Yeah, the coda. I've essentially finished the book, and it's been really great. I've been really impacted by it. Jordan Peterson is a really interesting, has a really interesting mind. So,
in about 2 weeks, unless you had more to say.
Nope, that's it. Stop.
In about 2 weeks from whenever you're listening to this, assuming you're listening to it soon after it comes out, plug back in and you'll have a full-length episode on the 12 Rules for Life of Jordan Peterson.
That's right. Yeah, I think it'll be a good one. So I've been really enjoying it.
Stay tuned.
Indeed.
There's more.
Okay, let's see. Do you want me to go on to my next one? I guess
sure,
I will.
Yeah,
let's do that. Let's do that. Let's go to the movies then. I recently went to see Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part 1. Someone was commenting on how it takes half an hour to read the title of the movie, let alone the fact that it's, you know, 2 hours and 40 minutes long. So
fair.
Yeah. This is part one of Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning.
So episode 7, part one.
Yeah, The Force Awakens, yeah. Mission Impossible number 7, you can think of it as. So Mission Impossible, for me, you know, I really liked the first three movies, but, and then, the fourth through seventh have come out a little bit later, and I have just been, more and more blown away by the Mission Impossible movies. I think the sixth one, Fallout, which is an amazing movie that impacted me deeply. I know that sounds absurd to say about a Mission Impossible movie, but I'm serious, you know?
Yeah.
And, I was just ready to be disappointed by this next one. And, I was not disappointed in the best way. And, I'm just really grateful. I'm going to go on a monologue about Tom Cruise, but I'm just really grateful for the things that Tom Cruise has been putting out lately. I just think it's been really amazing and, you know, for the most part, wholesome and worth contemplating. I don't know if you have any thoughts on
that. Tom Cruise is no doubt one of my favorite actors.
Yeah.
Absolutely love him. I mean, it's different genre a little bit, but, you know, one of my favorite movies is A Few Good Men, which is really young Tom Cruise. But
yeah.
Obviously, his action movies, Mission Impossible, Top Gun, are incredible as well.
Gotcha.
I actually had a girl. I've heard the same things about this movie as well. That it's phenomenal. I had a freshman student of mine, a female, who said that her favorite movie, I think this was today or yesterday, her favorite movie was Mission Impossible. I said, which one? Do you have a guess?
Was it the sixth one? The last one?
She said the first.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, it's her favorite movie. So
cool.
I have not seen most of them, honestly.
Okay.
So I'm not going to be a good conversation partner to go deep into it. But
gotcha.
I have a respect from a distance for Mission Impossible. Alas.
Good stuff. Yeah. So for me, this particular movie, this latest one, the main reason why I'm impacted a lot by Mission Impossible is because Tom Cruise's character, Ethan Hunt, he's the, you know, spy agent that is the central figure. And,
Big E, as I like to call him.
Ah, do you really? Interesting. Yeah. But he has revealed himself to be in the last two or three movies, particularly, what it means to be a leader in the best sense, and what it means to be a good man in the best sense, and what it means to pursue doing the right thing no matter what in the best sense. And it has really impacted me. This past movie, there's this, I won't spoil the plot or anything, but, you know, there's this new girl played by Hayley Atwell. Her name is Grace in the movie, who just kind of appears on the scene. And just the way that Ethan, Tom Cruise's character, treats her and is a leader to her it's not even in a romantic way, really, just from man to woman, the way he treats her and, you know, serves. It's just unbelievable. It's unbelievable that something like this could be depicted in the way that it is. And it was just so moving to me. And that's what a movie should do. A movie should inspire the person who watches it to go out and live differently and be whatever they have seen. So
yeah,
in some sense,
I really should give the Mission Impossibles a try. It's just daunting because there's 7 of them. Because I think I put them in a box as like action movie without meaningful storyline.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's accurate from the way that you talked about them.
Yeah. Now don't get me wrong. I think Mission Impossible is in a lot of ways the quintessential action movie. I mean, there's ridiculous car chases and, you know, Tom Cruise does these insane, probably the most famous thing is he does these insane stunts every movie on his own.
Right.
So there is that element of it. And I think one thing that Jesus particularly does in my life, with entertainment forms is he frequently uses the element of surprise to enter in. And I think we've talked about that before in depth. Mm-hmm. And, I think with Mission Impossible, that's a particular case of that. It's like, you know, I'm going in ready to watch some, you know, superficial action movie. And then, bang, I get hit with, you know, deep profundity in the form of Tom Cruise's character. So that's part of it, I think.
It's a good word.
Thank you.
Tom Cruise. Just kidding. Profundity.
Ah, yes. Thank you.
Should we stick with movies then?
Yes, indeed.
All right. So I'll combine my first and third point on the doc here.
Cool.
Because I think Indiana Jones, I can mention quick. We both saw this separately, like around the 4th of July. And that's funny because it'll be like September when this comes out. But it is August 4th. Maybe it'll be September 4th when this comes out. It was a decent movie. The new Indiana Jones.
Yeah, it was okay.
What was it even called? Indiana Jones and the
I can't
goes back in time to ancient Greece.
The Dial of Destiny.
The Dial of Destiny. That's it.
There it is.
Good answer. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. I had some very specific complaints about it, but I don't think it was as good as the rest of them.
Yeah, I was one of the few who really liked the latest one, Kingdom of the Crystal Skool with Shia LaBeouf. I actually liked that one. I know that's probably a really unpopular opinion.
Big Shia guy.
There it is. Yep. This latest one I thought was just an okay movie, and this was a situation where I thought this action movie was just like so action packed and superficial that it just got a little bit boring.
Yeah.
But I really liked the ending, and I won't spoil it again. But I really liked just the how they incorporate the idea of time and not being able to go back no matter what you do, and you know, just starting now and you know, being where you are, that kind of thing. I really liked how they tied that in at the end. So
yeah,
it's good stuff.
Harrison Ford runs like an 80-year-old.
He does.
Yeah,
but he runs. There's a lot of 80-year-olds that simply cannot run.
That's true. Yeah. That was kind of fun to watch, though.
But Tom Cruise, meanwhile, he's going to be sprinting over a train when he's 80.
Yeah, probably. Honestly, that's funny to think about. That's really funny.
He's going to look like he's 35.
Yeah.
Somehow.
That is really funny to think about.
Anyway.
Huh. So my other movie is, well, it's two movies, and it's two movies that I haven't seen, and I'm going to talk about it via a podcast.
Wait, two movies. Hang on. Let me guess.
Wait, you know this, right?
Barbenheimer?
That's one movie. I'm just kidding. Yes. Barbenheimer. Right. Two movies in one. It's like 5 hours long because it's just a double feature. So I haven't seen either Oppenheimer or Barbie. But I've really enjoyed the commentary on both of them. I particularly listen to Catching Foxes, which is a Catholic podcast that I want to talk about as well. Maybe I'll come back to. But they did a take on both movies. They're big movie reviewers, which has been interesting because I enjoy movie reviews, even though I do like movies, but like I enjoy the talking about movies more so. It's just amazing how into the Barbie discussions I've been. Considering I have not seen the movie and I don't even plan to, but I love hearing people's takes on it because like the initial reaction was my first like reaction that I heard from it was Ben Shapiro's like, you know about this?
Mm-mm.
Like he like raged against it. He's like, he literally says the worst movie he's ever seen. He burned Barbies on YouTube.
Oh, no.
Like, and said like, it just was the most feminist woke garbage. Right. So that's like my first impression of this. And then I just start hearing people who watch and like Catholics and Christians and like people whose opinions I trust as well. Like, yeah, I think people were overreacting. I don't think it was that feminist, like, et cetera. Like, and it's just been this back and forth. And one of the guys on Catching Foxes, Luke, kind of had that take. And I not having seen the movie, my caveat, I think that it's somewhere in the middle. I think that it seems that Ben Shapiro definitely overreacted because it's like a fun movie, right? It's a fun, you know, it brings the Barbie world to life. But there's also like all the men are like idiots and buffoons, and they like when they get into Barbie land or they try to instate the patriarchy or something. So it's like, it's definitely in a political environment using politically charged words that are going to trigger a lot of people, but it's also a fun movie and a lighthearted, and it's made by, from what I understand, is made by a pretty feminist writer and or director. And, so it's got all that going on. So my kind of perspective is that there is kind of an agenda there, but we, it's also not meant to be like, that's not the main point of the movie.
Yeah.
And I think some people maybe are just like, they're only seeing that. I don't know.
Yeah, that's interesting.
But I'm really intrigued by it. I'm just all for hearing people's perspectives, and I don't really want to see the movie.
Yeah, that's one thing that we were talking about before this, is just how it seems to just such a, to be such a positive thing for the culture to have like these like movies that everyone seems to be talking about. At the very least, it tends to, like, you know, it's something that we can all do shoulder to shoulder, sitting down next to each other at a movie theater and talking about it afterward. You know, I do really like that for our culture. So I think that's a positive thing just in general. In terms of like an art form, and I have not seen Barbie, so I very well may not be talking about Barbie specifically, but I know like there are movies and forms of entertainment that have a propagandist sort of agenda. Mm-hmm. And honestly, that destroys the art form. You know, just to give a counter example of the Mission Impossible that we just talked about, like, I do not feel in any sense whatsoever that I'm being preached a certain message when I watch Ethan Hunt, Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible. I'm watching a person live life in an authentic in a storyline that doesn't have an agenda, but it's a story that has a particular person in it that's living in a way that I want to be like. You know, I don't feel the director staring over my shoulder, like speaking something into my ear that he wants me to get out of the movie. You know, that ruins the art form. It ruins, you know, the immersive experience of the art. You know, but when, you know, in a movie that Barbie may well do this, it may not, but in a, you know, a movie where, you know, something like that happens. I've already said it over and over again, but it just destroys the ability of the viewer to like enter into the story and really get something out of it.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think propaganda agendas are terrible for the entertainment industry.
Yeah. And I don't know if that's what Barbie was. I get the sense that it was at least a little bit like that, but I also like, I don't know. And I'm probably not going to see it. But I love hearing what people think about it. I don't know. It's, but like you were saying, the cultural, like, everybody's watching the same movie and talking about it. There is something good and beautiful about just being able to do that. Like, even when you disagree, like, it's certainly, I think it can be an American thing. And it's just, I think it's a good thing for human beings to do together and engage in.
Amen. Long live the movies.
Yeah. I don't really think I'm going to talk about Oppenheimer. I mean, okay. I also haven't seen it, and I don't have as much to say about it. So,
gotcha.
I'll say one thing on Catching Foxes, and we'll turn it back to you. And
cool.
Your next entertainment thing. What do we call it?
Entertainment
your next
form.
Mode of, not form. It's like specific.
Yeah, entertainment piece.
Piece of entertainment.
Ah, yes, indeed.
There you go. So, Catching Foxes is where the review of Oppenheimer and Barbie. Although I looked at a few, this is where one of them. One of my sources for. I've been listening to Catching Foxes lately. Have you listened to them?
I don't think I've ever listened to them, really. No.
So, I used to not like them. They are two, like, Steubenville grads. Like, they're, like, 40 now, but they've been doing this for, like, a long time. I don't know if it's since they graduated from Steubenville, but it's, like, they've been going at it a long time, and they've been friends a long time. And they're, like, almost as good as us.
Yeah.
Maybe, like, almost as good as Matt Frad, somewhere between like Matt Frad and us, maybe.
Nice. Okay.
That's where I'd put him.
Matt, like, Frad's below,
with us,
right?
Being at the top. Yeah, yeah, just gotcha. To clarify.
Yeah, yeah. Just making sure I understand the hierarchy. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. I think I tried to listen to them probably in college or in Focus, and I was scandalized because they're explicit. Like, their episodes are labeled explicit, and their intention is like they want to just be unfiltered and just have a real conversation. And so they do cuss a little bit. And that just turned, I think it scandalized me. And whenever I listened to it first, and I was just like, who do these people think they are? They're Catholic podcast. But I've tuned back into them because I listened to an episode where Gomer was on Pints with Aquinas. Gomer is one of the hosts of Catching Foxes. And I loved his personality. I loved his takes. I just found him very wise and insightful on his cultural commentary and on his just perspective on faith and life and his family. I just was really enamored with his personality. And so I tuned back into Catching Foxes and found I do like it. And they've started cussing less. I think in the, like, I've listened to 3 or 4 episodes from, like, recent, from the last couple months. And I only remember hearing, like, 1 or 2 cuss words. They bleep them out, I'm pretty sure. At least the one I'm thinking of, they bleeped out. I was impressed. I've just been really impressed. I really, cool. like, they're kind of those people that's like, I trust their opinion. I'm not going to let it, like, change my opinion necessarily, or, like, it's not in a, like, I believe what they believe type way, but I like, especially on movies, right? It's like, I want to know what they think, because I trust the way they're thinking about it.
Yeah. I know for me, it's important to understand too. I think is for me, I form my opinions out loud in conversation. You know, so I think that's a really important context to understand too, is maybe these guys are this way. I haven't listened to it, but maybe they're this way. Maybe they're just, like, they're trying to have a conversation, so therefore the things that they blurt out might not be their fleshed out opinions, and that's okay. You know, that's fine.
Right. And that's exactly right for them, and that's the beauty of, I think, podcasts in general. And there's a balance. You don't want to be so unfiltered that nothing you say you actually mean, but I think there's something so beautiful about, and, you know, we've done this for years in and off the podcast, like, just fleshing out our thoughts vocally. Through externally processing. It's such a beautiful thing.
Catching Foxes, indeed.
That's them. Check them out. Don't be scandalized or be scandalized, whatever. You do you.
Yeah.
All right. What's next?
All right. Going back to the movies for one more round, right? Yeah, just last round. Sound of Freedom. We got to touch on this. I saw that on July 4th. I saw it on, sorry, I'm trying to, how much time
are we in? I was telling you that we're at about 30 minutes, and then you gave me a 4. Well, I'm like, July 4th?
I couldn't decide whether I saw a 3 or a 4. Anyway,
okay, yeah, so it was a 3, I'm
sorry. We're at 30 minutes, everybody.
But it was the 4th of July, you can hold up 4 fingers for that.
I saw it on the 4th the of fourth. July, okay. I'm giving him the 4 sign. All right, the first day it came out, and man, it's tough to watch, and I will be honest, a lot of the hoopla, look that word up, surrounding Sound of Freedom was the fact that it just encountered a lot of obstacles to being released. You know, a lot of people, supposedly didn't want to release it and, you know,
can
all
you,
that.
Can you mention the plot real quick for those?
Yes. Yeah, I will. Yeah. Okay. That's what I thought. I went and watched it, and it blew me away. Absolutely blew me away. And I was someone who just didn't really want to watch this topic at all, but found it necessary. Mm-hmm. So, quick summary: it's about basically the child sex trafficking industry across the world, and it follows this particular man, Tim Ballard, who was a former agent for the Department of Homeland Security. And decided to leave his job in order to serve more primarily in these Central South American countries, or really across the world, rescuing kids directly from the child sex trafficking industry. So,
it's amazing.
Yeah, it's a really powerful story.
It's Jim Caviezel.
Jim Caviezel is the actor, the former, you know, Passion of Christ actor, who portrayed Jesus. I think maybe the most wrenching thing takeaway from The Sound of Freedom for me was that, and Jordan Peterson touches on this a lot, is that evil exists and a human being should understand that. Evil people exist in this world, and evil occurs because of them, like it or not. That's the reality of our world.
Yeah.
And there is no... there is very little, if anything, more evil than this sort of thing. Enslavement of children for sexual purposes.
Yeah.
Across the world. So one of the most wrenching things from the movie that I found, and I've heard multiple people say this and agree with me, is at the beginning of the movie they actually show video clips of real abductions of children that they've caught on film. And I mean, there's literally, it absolutely blew my mind. And there's literally one where, just to give you one example, where this lady, she, you know, seems to be homeless or something, but she's literally laying there in like some subway hall, like sleeping with her child, like her really small child. In fact, so small, she seems like 6 months old, like wrapped in her arms. And this man like lays up next to her while she's sleeping and pulls the child out of the mother's hand and like walks away with the child while the mother is sleeping. And a real video. And I was like, you know, you talk about something that's hard to get your mind around, you know, even after seeing it on video. Mm-hmm. So anyway, things like that, I think it's very hard to watch, but I think we're seeing worth understanding.
Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. I want to see it. I just really didn't get an opportunity to while it was out in theaters here. What strikes me, I was really struck by what you were talking about, like, connecting it to Jordan Peterson and particularly like the naivety that he talks about, like people who act as if evil doesn't exist or assume that people will be nice to them or assume that like they will get what they want or that, you know, everything's all happy-go-lucky. Like they get walked all over and like they aren't treated fairly because it's like you're expecting people to give you exactly what you want and treat you nicely. And then you end up getting walked all over. So I think there's, and maybe a film like that can be just a sobering reminder that like, unfortunately, we live in a dark world and I can't trust everybody. And I need to, you know, especially thinking of like, if you're a father of a family or anyone you're responsible for protecting, like you need to keep that in mind for the sake of those you're in charge of protecting.
Yeah.
That the world is a dark place and a scary place at times. And as sobering as that is, we need to know that.
Yeah. Amen.
Yeah. On a lighter note, you didn't think I'd look up Hoopla. Hoopla.
Oh, what is it?
A boisterous, jovial commotion or excitement.
Yep.
Or extravagant publicity is number two. Or talk intended to mislead or confuse is definition number three.
I think the first definition captured what I wanted to say perfectly.
Okay. Boisterous, jovial commotion or excitement. Yeah, there was a lot of hoopla.
A boisterous excitement.
Mm. Awesome. Good word. You're full of good words today.
Thank you.
All right, next. I've got some books here.
Books.
Let me go to Dorothy Day. Just in case I want to make sure to mention this one, in case I don't get to one of the others.
I'll allow it.
So this goes back, I think, I forget what books made my top five list on that episode we did.
Dorothy Day was not in there, I don't think.
She was not, but I'm trying to remember what was because I'm trying to remember if this book I'm about to mention was on it. Anyway, the book that I'm going to mention is called The Life You Save May Be Your Own. It's The title of the book was taken from a Flannery O'Connor story, but it is a biography. I think I at least talked about it in that episode.
Yeah.
Or at some point I have on the podcast. It is a biography of Walker Percy, Flannery O'Connor, Thomas Merton, and Dorothy Day. Four 20th century Catholics who were very influential writers, who also kind of lived parallel lives and corresponded with each other. And I had read that book first, loved that biography, and then I've slowly made my way through those four authors themselves. And the last one for me to get to was Dorothy Day. And the one before that was Merton, Thomas Merton, Seven Story Mountain, which is phenomenal. Merton, I compare, yeah, it's on the bookshelf, see you looking at it. I compare Merton and Dorothy Day a lot to each other because they're both phenomenal writers, but then also, you know, a man and a woman of immense spirituality. And Dorothy Day, in her case, she was like basically a revolutionary communist in her youth. Had a kind of weirdly like God-haunted upbringing. Like I think she was maybe baptized because she ended up being conditionally baptized later, but like maybe baptized Presbyterian and like spent some time going to church, but then in her youth, teenage, and 20s, like she ends up in these like communist revolutionary movements, like clearly like wants to do something big and like good, but is just in this like very distorted place. What's interesting is that her friends, her communist friends, later told her, like, you were always too religious to be a communist. Because the end of her story is she obviously ends up becoming a Catholic, starting the Catholic worker movement. There are many apostolates inspired by her today. But her big thing, what is her big thing? Her big thing is poverty. Like, she lived in poverty. And I think she's really relevant today in terms of defending, like, the poor and the oppressed out of our Catholic faith. And the way that she did it was, she also was an intellectual, which is cool. And the Catholic worker movement was so much inspired by, like, thinking about the ways that Catholics should live and thinking about Catholic social thinking and thinking about what it means, what the dignity of work is and how we should treat workers and what a society should look like. And the role that the saints play in that. So I don't know. She just had some, and just beautiful writing. I just really, really enjoyed reading her biography, The Long Loneliness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we read that in college.
Oh, you read it?
Yeah, we read it in college in my Theology 101 class.
That was, I would, if I were teaching Theology 101, I would consider putting that book in it too.
You know,
actually, it's more, I'd be more likely to put it in like a, maybe not Theology 101, maybe in like a humanities class, but go ahead. Sorry.
Gotcha. I was just going to say that it didn't really resonate with me at the time, to be honest. I didn't really know who Dorothy Day was at all. And yeah, I kind of wish I had come into it with a little bit more intent, but
yeah,
we did. It was part of the Theology 101 course.
Yeah. No, I can see that. I think this time in my life where I'm just thinking a lot about these ideas that she wrestled with and attempted to live out, it's particularly relevant. She definitely, you know, lives gospel simplicity. You know, she ran this like apostolate out of that mindset. And I think we live in such a like business-minded church culture where it's like, not that people are trying to get rich in their apostolates, but like, there's a big temptation to think about, like, I got to make money to sustain the organization. And she just lived out of radical dependence on God. And it was just really beautiful to read about.
That's amazing. Yeah. Wow. Very cool.
I thought you should know.
That's very bold. Who's that by?
Morgan Wallen.
Aha. Uh-huh. Yes, indeed. I'm not going to say the joke.
I thought you should know about Dorothy Day.
Oh, yes, indeed. Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm going to give my piece on that joke. You know when you're singing a song and someone asks you who it's by and you say,
oh, yeah.
And then they go, let's keep it that way.
Uh-huh.
I think that is like the meanest joke and it should be eradicated from our our popular culture. You heard it from me first. Yeah. I just got really offended by that joke once or twice.
Yeah.
And I was like, that is really mean and people should stop saying that because I was really enjoying myself singing and then I just got absolutely shot down unexpectedly.
That's true. That's fair.
And I was like excited. You know how like you're excited to tell someone who you think doesn't know the song, like who it's by? You're like, oh, you should check it out. It's by Morgan Wallen. And they say, let's keep it that way. It's like, oh my gosh, such a letdown. I hate it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I appreciate you not finishing the joke. That means a lot.
Thanks. Yeah. Yeah. You're welcome.
That means you don't hate me.
That's right. I don't.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
But anyway, right, why did I burst into singing Morgan Wallen right then?
Because that's who I've been listening to. You know, Morgan Wallen is a bit of a polarizing figure. He has some songs that I don't like, but he has some songs that I really, 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 really like, which has tended to overwhelm the songs I don't like, to be quite honest. I've been listening to his latest album, One Thing at a Time. He's got like 40 million songs on there.
One Thing at a Time is actually 36 things at a time.
That's right.
34 or something like that.
He's got like a million songs on there. 36,
yeah. No, that was Zach Bryan, I think. I think he has 34.
Okay, yeah, but it's close. 35.
We'll can split we the difference.
Okay, all right. But yeah, he's just, you know, I want to get your thoughts on this because I've noticed, and this is tends to be prevalent in country music still, thank God.
I really like where this is going.
He just has a religiosity, you know, that is just very Southern, and he just integrates it in his music. And I mean, I'll give you an example. The first song I have listed on here is Don't Think Jesus. Yeah. It was like a Billboard top 100. I think it was number one or whatever for a while. It's literally got Jesus' name in the song, and it's all about how Jesus views him. And
it's a beautiful song.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's a great song. And it's like, it's there's just this religiosity in his music still that I appreciate.
We were talking about Max and the Logos podcast. They actually did a whole episode on Morgan Wallen.
Oh, did they?
And Don't Think Jesus, that song in particular.
Wow.
You would like it.
Yeah. Cool. Okay.
But yeah, no, I love where you're going with this. And Morgan Wallen, I think, you know, I wrote the article about Zach Bryan.
Yeah, and, very similar.
More Than Entertained. This is very similar, and in some ways more explicit. Like, Morgan Wallen comes out and has, like, songs that the lyrics look like a Christian song, right? Zach Bryan's not that quite that bold. He's just more like God-haunted, I would describe it as. But I kid you not, I was listening. Morgan Wallen, I don't, like, I've listened, checked out the album, like, I listen to occasionally, but not regularly. But I happened to be listening to him this morning. And the song I was listening to was, what's the one about the Bible? The Book I Didn't Write.
Something like that.
One Book I Didn't Write, yeah. Something like that.
I think it's called, is it called In the Bible? Anyway, it's one of those.
No, that's a different one. Okay, I'm thinking it's One Book I Didn't Write. I think that's it. I'll look it up as I go. But this song, it's basically about, like, I wrote the book on doing all these things, like all these sins, right? But one book, I wrote the book is what it's called. But this, like, the one book he didn't write is the Bible. And he says it's like the one book he needs to live by and read. Like, that's basically the point of the song. It's just so beautiful. But it's like, yeah, there's a handful of songs that he has like that, but then there's all sorts of partying and drinking and hooking up, like, type songs as well. And I think that's really characteristic of, I've always felt that's characteristic of country music as a genre. Like, you get some inappropriate things, but at the end of the day, like, it's rooted in faith and good values.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, Morgan Wallen has a lot of those things in there for sure. Yeah. I'll just jump back to the Don't Think Jesus song for a second.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to take it away from there.
No.
Yeah.
That was great. That was good stuff. I think, just to keep going with your point there, the Don't Think Jesus song is really powerful because, you know, there are these things about, like, just some relatively inappropriate things about women in the album. But this Don't Think Jesus song, I think, is really powerful because it's towards the end, and it's really about how just, like, he's recognizing that these, like, this partying and, you know, like, using women and things like that are inappropriate, and these are things that are, like, bad in his life. And he's reflecting on how Jesus views him despite those things. And I think it's just so powerful. It's like, I'm recognizing that these things are wrong, and I'm standing before God honestly with these things in my life. And I think it's just a really powerful song.
I think back to, like, the phrase, does it glorify sin? And I think probably at times it does, Morgan Wallen's music. But at the end of the day, I think especially when you look at it as a whole, like, in the context of the 35-song album, I think it's 34, but we split the difference. And you take into account songs like Don't Think Jesus and I Wrote the Book, those kinds of songs, it doesn't seem to be glorifying sin at the end of the day. As much as, you know, we talked about rap music, like, as a genre, tends to seem to glorify sin.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, it's good. A couple other songs just to give a quick plug. I really like Dying Man. I think this is the last song. That's just really good. He's talking about, like, a woman in a really wholesome way about how he, you know, thought he was going to die, but there's a woman in his life who gave him a reason to live, which I think is really good. And then Thought You Should Know, I've been listening to a lot.
You should know.
Yeah, it's literally a song about him calling his mom late at night because he misses her. I mean, it's good. It's just a really wholesome song. And, you know, he uses the Thought You Should Know That Your Prayers You Thought You Wasted On Me Have Finally Found Their Way On Through.
It's It's beautiful.
That's a beautiful line. You know, yeah, this is wholesome.
Like a little, and, yeah. It's a little St. Monica, St. Augustine action.
Yeah, that's
going
right.
On there.
Yeah, it is. So, great song. Check Morgan Wallen out. It's good stuff.
I'd say Roll Tide, but
football.
I think he's more of a Go Vols guy.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah. He's from Knoxville area. So.
Gotcha.
All right. Well, I don't know what else I want to mention. I got two more books, but I figure I should only talk about one of them. I don't have a lot to. One of them I only started. So maybe, like, one of them's not going to be that interesting. I don't think either of them are that interesting to our audience.
All right. Touch on one of them and pick one in 3, 2, 1.
Got it.
Okay. Awesome.
Luigi Giussani, The Religious Sense.
I like how that worked. All right. Go ahead.
You made me make a decision.
Yeah. That was good.
You have power over me now. The Religious Sense is so okay. Here's the background with Father Luigi Giussani. He's the founder. Do you know who he is?
Yes, I do.
He's the founder of the Communion Liberation Movement, which is a little known movement, Catholic movement in America. But I've always been kind of haunted by it in the sense that, like, it's popped up in my life from time to time, and I've never fully understand it, but I've been kind of captivated by it. And I guess that it's also hard to pin down and explain to somebody. It's because it's similar to a lot of other things, but it's a movement that's centered around the teachings and writings of Father Luigi Giussani, who was a priest in Italy, who was a teacher. This is one of the reasons why I like this book in particular. He's a teacher, an intellectual for sure, like definitely like a philosopher. And he wrote quite a bit, but he also founded this movement that's very centered on community. It's centered on viewing the Christian life as an experience. And this is one of the things that's coming across in this book, The Religious Sense. He looks at approaching faith and religion as it's rational, it's reason-based, but he sees reason as something that accounts for all of reality, including experience, which is why the Communion Liberation Movement is so focused on, like, you'll hear the phrase, like, the experience of the Christian life, the event of Christ, right? It's very personal, and it's very experience-based. And so when they talk about Christ's life, they talk about, you hear the word experience and event come up constantly. It's talked about as an encounter, and just like the gospel events as an encounter, something we have to encounter. And you hear, one of the funny things about it is once you become familiar with this way of speaking, you can pick it out when you like meet a priest who is influenced by this movement, including our bishop, Bishop Reka. He was very influenced by Communion and Liberation, and I can hear it in his homilies. But it's been nice to kind of go to the source, and I think I'm beginning to kind of understand what the movement's about, and I find it helpful for me. I think especially, you know, as someone who gets in my head a lot, I think it's a refreshing take on reason and how we are to use reason in accounting for the whole of our experience and not just starting at first principles and seeing what you can prove logically.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah,
I have no thoughts.
You've heard of the movement? Have
yeah.
You had any
so my connection to it was, I am Father Giussani's long lost grandson. No, I'm just kidding. All right, that was
ridiculous.
Terrible thing to say. All right, no, I had a roommate when
you
I was
also
in
said grandson, and he was a celibate priest, so that doesn't work.
Yeah, I know. That's why I blurted out that it was a terrible thing to say.
Okay, anyway. You were a roommate with him.
I had a roommate when I was in Focus. He was a student at Ave Maria, and he was involved in the Communion Liberation Movement.
Yeah.
He had actually people over to our house to like have a Communion Liberation
of
gathering. So that's how I found out about it, and I don't know very much about it at all. I didn't really inquire very much, but that's how I found out.
Yeah, one of the things I've learned about them recently is they I guess one of the aspects of a Communion Liberation community, they vacation a lot together. And I guess it's also like kind of an Italian thing, but and one of the things that they do, they go out into nature. It's big on like vacationing in nature. So like hikes are big, backpacking type things. And one of the kind of staples of their trips is a silent hike. You're like with a bunch of people, but you're silent on the hike. And one of the things Giussani would say is like, you have to, in order to encounter beauty, you have to be silent in order to take it in, which I think is a really cool thing to think about.
Very cool.
So anyway, The Religious Sense, I think it's the first book in a trilogy. I think he goes, like, it's like the broad, like, why should we believe in God? And then he gets, I think one's like the origin of the Christian claim, and he goes like more specific as he goes along in the trilogy.
Yeah, I think The Empire Strikes Back in there or something.
Yep, that's episode 4 of the trilogy.
Yeah.
That checks out.
It does, yeah.
But yeah, I think he's also just one of those, like, there's people that I trust who have been really influenced by him. And so I'm trying to figure out what it's all about.
That's really good.
Yeah. Just like you with tattoos.
Yeah, indeed.
People that you trust have them.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. I forgot. Thanks for remembering that. I said that. Yeah, I really like how your reading seems to follow the thread, like to follow a thread. Like, you have something come up in your life, so you decide to read about it. Or
that's exactly right.
Someone gave you that, you know, biography book about the four different 20th century thinkers, and so you decide to read about it. And now you're reading all the works of it. Just follows a thread, which I like. Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, I think that, like, my life is very much shaped by, like, my ideas. And so, like, when I think about the direction my life is headed in, it follows like an intellectual kind of journey that I'm on. So I think that's a good observation. I think that's definitely true.
It's cool. Good stuff.
All right. Well, have we been entertained? Do we have anything else you want to add at the last minute?
Nah, I'm good. Quick plug, get to the movies. Long Live the Movies. We need you to go support it. So go do it.
Yeah. You're passionate about that too. And yes, we've talked about like there. Communal movie watching. A movie theater, great, because we got to keep them going. But like, even just having movie night with your community, with your friends, like, and being able to talk about it. Those, I wish we could do more of those, because I know the times that we've done that have just been so fruitful to sit around and discuss a movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, too, that was a big, you know, not a big part, but, it's not an insignificant part of my family's, life. Growing up, I would go to the movies. I was like, about halfway through this podcast, you were talking about something, and I have to admit, we were talking about movies, and like a memory popped into my mind of me and my family like standing outside the movie theater in Huntsville talking about a movie that we had just seen, and my dad made some hilarious joke about something that had happened in the movie, and I was like struggling to not laugh when we were doing the podcast because I was thinking about it. So anyway,
the joke? Are you going to share it?
I do, yeah. It was about the movie Tenet, but anyway, I'll leave you on the cliffhanger. But anyway, it just reminded me of just the power and meaning of going to a movie together.
You sure you don't want to tell the joke? Okay.
It's too complicated.
You're not sure.
It's too complicated. Yeah.
I get that. I just want to make sure in case our listeners are like, I want to know the joke.
Yeah. They can ask me if they're in this area and able.
Colleen will probably text you.
Okay. Yep. I'll allow it.
Yeah. She's going to now. Now that I called
her. I'll allow it.
She's absolutely going to text us. All right. Peace. What do I say?
You say the thing that.
Yeah, I know the thing I say.
Got it. Yeah. Okay.
Praise be Jesus Christ.
Now and forever.
Amen.